Hello again, it's episode 3 of Think You Know, The Presidents. I'm Flor McCarthy.
And I'm Lise Hand.
Today it's all about our third president, Eamon de Valera, known as the Longfella.
Or the Long Hoor, as Michael Collins used to call him, who of course was once his great ally and then became like his arch enemy.
Well, that's a great observation because his name is so divisive in terms of Irish history, you know, a bit like Marmite, you could say.
I know, yeah, but let's not say anything bad about Marmite.
Oh, God, no. But we have a lot of stuff to get through and some stories that are rarely discussed about him, like offering condolences on the death of Hitler.
One of my favourites, there's actually a photograph of him wearing a Native American war bonnet without a bother on him. I mean, can you imagine how cancelled he'd be today for doing that?
Totally. It's a great pic, though. Or escaping one of his many jailings, this one dressed as a woman.
Or pulling a Macron and marrying his older teacher. Well, he did have one of the longest political careers of the 20th century, from the 1916 Rising right up to his retirement in 1973 at the age of 90.
Yeah, born in 1882 and died in 1975.
I mean, just to give you an idea of just how long he was around, how long the Longfella was around, was when he died, the cortege went past my school and we were all marched out to stand, you know, as a guard of honour outside the school. So, I mean, this was a guy that was born in the 19th century and yet I was still around to see him being, you know, see him on his last trip.
Yeah. And I remember stories of Dev as well. One where he visited the island of Cape Clear in a chopper. Somebody on board suggested that he throw some money out to the natives on the island and he quipped, well, maybe I'd make them happier if I threw myself out.
To St. Patrick's Hall, Dublin Castle, went the man who was the architect of Republican Ireland, Eamon de Valera. Never a man to show emotion, he must nevertheless have felt great pride as he left St. Patrick's Hall. Rebel, prisoner under death sentence, premier and now president. What an amazing life de Valera has led. He would be more than human if it did not afford him satisfaction. A place in history awaits President de Valera.
So look at Dev's life. I mean, it's way too long to deal with in one short show.
We'd be here all day.
We would. We'd be here all day. So we thought we'd just really talk about the person and the president. And we're going to rattle, and I mean rattle, through his dizzyingly long life at a rapid pace. And then we'll just dive into some of the more interesting bits. And Flor, just a reminder that our listeners are actually getting all the presidents in a row, in chronological order. So it really is worthwhile them actually pressing the follow button.
So Eamon de Valera was born in 1882 in New York City to Catherine Coll, who was an Irishwoman who had emigrated to the States. The facts have been established that there were two birth certs. So his mother signed different names, allegedly Juan de Valero, Juan de Valeras.
Sounds like a sort of song, Juan de Valeras.
It does. He was thought to have been Spanish. Somebody else said he was South American. Another version of it had him as Cuban. So there seem to be different stories about him. And the only thing that's clear is that it's unclear. His mother sent him to live in Ireland when he was 2 years old with relatives in Brewery, County Limerick. So that must have had an impact on him, do you think? I mean, did he meet his mother again, didn't he?
He did meet his mother again. I mean, we have to remember this is a little boy that was sent away from his mother to go and live with his mother's mother, his grandmother, who was only in her 50s, in a very, very rural, small place. This was a cottage, you know, and his own uncle, Edward Coll, who was with him, the brother of his mother, wrote about how he was heartbroken about how the little boy sobbed all the way home aboard a ship. And he did see her again. She did visit once just before she remarried. And he just has vague memories of an austere woman dressed in black and a big handbag or something. And he did then see her a second time when he went to America. But you would have to wonder, that must have shaped and coloured all his life, how he wrote policies, all everything that, you know, must have been really with that in the back of his mind.
Now, 1916, of course, is where the stories of Dev and in the history books really come into their own. He was the only surviving commandant. He commanded Boland's Mill area in Dublin during the Rising. He was arrested and sentenced to death, but this was commuted to a life sentence. He was released from prison in 1917, became a leading figure in Sinn Féin, which had gained prominence after the Rising. 1918, elected an MP in County Clare, arrested again and imprisoned in England, escaped from Lincoln Jail in a very famous episode.
So, I mean, I suppose you could argue, Floor, that Dev really was a great escape artist. I mean, there was a touch of the Houdini about him, if you think about it. So there he was in Kilmainham Jail. Many of the leaders of the 1916 Rising had been executed. And he wasn't.
Escaped.
He escaped from that. A lot of people thought that that was down to the fact that he was an American citizen, but he wasn't. It's generally...
It was timing, wasn't it?
It was just really timing. Yeah. It was like Prime Minister Asquith at the time, the British Prime Minister. There was a lot of flack now about
the
executions and public sentiment in Ireland was turning against their execution.
And by the time it was his turn, they were stopping the executions.
They were stopping the executions. Yeah. So off he went. However, he did subsequently end up in jail in Lincoln in England and he escaped from there.
Do you know how he did it?
Not entirely sure.
Now, picture this. Dev dressed as a woman because that's how he did it.
Really?
Yeah. So they got him a fur coat and in fact, the key had been smuggled in a birthday cake.
Stop. Yeah. You're serious. My God. And I mean, that's amazing.
That's how he was sprung.
And he must have made a very tall woman. I mean, absolutely. I love that. It's just absolutely great.
No need for heels under
that's
the fur coat.
Absolutely amazing. Of course, then, you know, he missed the War of Independence as well, because he was at that time travelling in the States, been a complete rock star and trying to get recognition for the fledgling state of Ireland and do a bit of fundraising on the side as well. So therefore, that bloody conflict, he, in every sense of the word, he actually managed to sort of sidestep that. Not saying he did it deliberately, but that's just the way it panned out. And of course, then possibly, maybe most controversially, some would argue that he escaped getting blamed for the signing of the treaty because
he didn't go to London.
He refused to go to London. He said, no, I'm going to stay in Dublin. And he sent over a team of, I think it was five plenipotentiaries who were allowed to sign. He said, go ahead, lads, and just make sure you bring back the right result. So he sat there and when they came back and said, we signed the treaty, Dev, he went bananas. But then again, he wasn't necessarily blamed for it.
Yeah. Apparently he had his real thinking on this was that it would break down. The talks wouldn't lead to a negotiation. He'd swoop in, get some concessions and then they'd sign.
So he just played a hero, swoop in the cape. Yeah, maybe the same coat. It's like, he obviously liked dressing up, didn't he?
1919-20, he travelled to the US to raise funds and support for the Irish Republic. So here we see really practical steps towards him, you know, forming in his head that an Irish Republic was what he wanted. Independence for Ireland was going to be his mission.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mad story, actually. It was 1919 and he went to New York. He was actually smuggled on a boat from Liverpool. Apparently he was seasick, sick as a dog, and they had to feed him loads of brandy and keep him in a hold somewhere. So anyway, he arrives, was there 10 days in New York. No one knew he was there. And they literally unveiled him in, I think, the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York, like, you know, picking a very long rabbit out of a hat. And off he went on this grand tour of the States, crisscrossing. Yes, exactly. And stopping in all sorts of places. So one of the places he fetched up was Spooner, Wisconsin, which was the Native American reservation of the Chippewa tribe. And I really hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And there he was made an honorary chieftain.
Do we know why? Was there a ceremony?
Oh, yeah, there was a ceremony. And of course, the nice, neat thing about it is, of course, is that Taoiseach, what is the Irish for chieftain?
Yes.
So it was very, can I say this word correctly, perspicacious of them, because that was still a few years off. Farsighted. Thanks. I should have just gone with that.
They were thinking ahead.
They were. So there was this big ceremony and he was presented with various things and he was bestowed with a name. They actually gave him a name. And it was the rather frivolous name of Dressing Feather. Which translates in, and I hope I'm getting this right, Nene Ong Abe or Abe. And that was his tribal name. And it was, he was named in honour of one of their old chieftains.
There is a brilliant photo of him in a Native American headdress. Is that from then?
No, that's actually not from then. That was, I think, sent to him later. And he did disport himself around the Aris, I think, amusing anyone who in sight with it, which is actually great. But he loved it as well. And he said it meant more to him than, you know, the freedoms of loads of cities. So he was really chuffed by this.
He returned to Ireland in 1921 and became president of the Republic during the treaty negotiations. But then he didn't go. That is seen really as his biggest political error. He opposed the treaty, which was signed by Michael Collins, of course, in London, and that created the Irish Free State, but retained ties to Britain. We launched into a civil war, and the pro-treaty forces, the Michael Collins forces, prevailed. Dev's political leadership, 1926, he founded Fianna Fáil. According to most historians, it was a way to ensure that he was back into a political leadership role. And 1932, he became president of what we had then, the Executive Council of the Free State. In other words, prime minister, began dismantling the treaty restrictions and asserting Irish sovereignty. So here he is again, taking very big steps towards Irish independence. So 1937, he's Taoiseach, he introduces and passes our new constitution, Bunreacht na hÉireann, creating the modern state of Ireland. And of course, it was in that document, Bunreacht na hÉireann, our constitution, where the office of president was created. So whether or not he knew back then in 1937 that one day it would be himself up in the Oris, we don't know.
Oh, you wouldn't put it past him to have that tucked away in a corner of his head.
So the emergency 1939 to 1945, otherwise known as World War II. So we maintained strict neutrality despite massive pressure from Britain and the US. And there is one very interesting point on neutrality and Dev here, because it's often thought that he was so strict on establishing our neutrality because it was a sovereignty issue. We were a new, young, emerging state. And if we could decide our own place in a world war, then that was evidence.
Absolutely. He was just afraid that the state that he'd helped to birth was going to get gobbled up by one or other of the other countries.
Yeah, yeah. So there was one mistake in that really long career that he couldn't escape from, Lise.
Yes, I mean, there was one gaffe, and it really was one on a global scale. Mm. So on the morning of May the 2nd, 1945, he tipped along to, now, before I go on, it's either the house, the residence, or the German legation, right, of Edward Hemphill, who was the German minister here, and he offered his condolences on the death of Adolf Hitler.
Shocking.
It was shocking. I suppose he was thinking in terms of just keep the neutrality thing on the road and all that.
And they were friends.
Yeah, and they were friends. And so I think he maybe thought it was going to be seen as a gesture. But at this stage, I mean, all the things, there was reports coming out of the concentration camps at that stage. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't that he was ignorant of the situation. So, you know, he did actually try and justify it. And he said it would have been, quote unquote, an unpardonable discourtesy not to call on him. And he said, I certainly wasn't going to add to his humiliation in the hour of defeat.
So he saw it as mannerly.
Dev, read the room. Read the globe.
Read the world. Yeah.
Read the globe.
Yeah. And you know what? Incredibly, you know those big books, the visitors' books we were talking about at Áras an Uachtaráin, and they're here in Dublin in the National Archives, and anyone can drop in. If you go through those big visitors' books, the signature of Hemphill, who was effectively the German ambassador in Ireland, is there until the 1960s, visiting Ireland on holidays with his wife. So we're into the 1950s, 1951 to 54, he was Taoiseach. Re-elected Taoiseach, it's now 1959, and finally he's off to the Oris. The first former Taoiseach as well to hold the office of Uachtaráin na hÉireann. 1966, re-elected president. 1973, he retired, Dev, out of public life, age 90, after 14 years as president. He died age 92 and is buried in Glasnevin Cemetery.
God almighty, do you know, I feel older after listening to all that.
How would you describe his looks, Lise?
Well, I actually think that certainly in his youth, he was a fine looking fella. If you look at any footage of him, he has this very direct, piercing gaze. He's always looking straight into camera and, you know, very clear cut features and, you know, that sort of dark hair. And he was quite sallow skinned, I think, as well.
Dignity is a word that was used to describe Dev an awful lot. And you can kind of see that in the photographs, can't you?
Yes. And he obviously clearly had a huge amount of charisma, because when he was in the US doing his tour in 1919, there were reports of women fainting when he went around and all these jungle
like
tours. By the time he became to be president, he was old and he looked old and he sounded old. And I think that's the image of Dev that's imprinted in so many people's, you know, in the back of people's minds. And I think that, you know, if you look at a photograph that, you know, if you look at the portrait of him in Leinster House, it's very austere. It almost looks like he's black and white sitting there in the dark suit. And he just sort of looked old. And I think that's the image. And that portrait is quite interesting because next to it, there's this enormous portrait of Michael Collins, who, of course, was his sidekick, his absolute, you know, lieutenant all the way through the, you know, the 1916 and right.
Then
all
great rival.
And then became his great rival. And actually, the death of Michael Collins haunted. He was assassinated in Bail na Blá.
Yeah.
And during the war, the Civil War.
1952.
Yes. And his assassination kind of haunted Dev all the way through the rest of his life.
But when you think about the portrayal of those two men in Neil Jordan's Michael Collins, the film, you have Liam Neeson playing the dashing Michael Collins, and you have Alan Rickman playing a kind of snivelling sort of a Dev.
Yeah.
And those two portrayals were the ones that we're sort of left with. That's what people think of when they think of Dev and Collins, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, you could say there were two De Valeras. There was the young, dashing Dev, the revolutionary, and then there was the older Dev who was much more avuncular and was seen as a conservative and very tied to the Catholic Church. So you really had these two different personalities.
And there was so much more to him.
His life seems to dominate when you talk about De Valera. And yet, that life he shared with his wife, and she was there for the entirety of his time in public life.
She absolutely was. I mean, they were married for nearly 65 years, when you think about that. Sinead De Valera liked to kind of be in the background a bit while he was president, but she was still a very supportive partner. They had 7 children together. She was actually his teacher. She was teaching him Irish when they met and fell in love.
She was 4 years older than him.
Yeah.
Yeah, touch of the Macrons there, isn't there, really?
I mean, there were so many sides to Dev. He was a husband, a revolutionary, a mathematician.
Funny that you should mention the mathematician there, because just one of the things that he did, he was obviously hugely into science and maths, and he invited a German physicist, Erwin Schrödinger, to Ireland in 1939 to escape Nazi persecution. Schroeder accepted the invitation, moved to Dublin with his wife and mistress, where he lived for 16 years. But it got me thinking, I wonder, was he slightly inspired by Schrödinger? Because everybody, well, a lot of people have heard of Schrödinger's cat, and I am no scientist, but essentially it's a kind of thought experience where you put a cat into a box with something radioactive and you shut the box and you don't know until you open the box whether the thing inside, the cat inside, is dead or alive. That's essentially it. And I've thought, really, there is a touch of the Schrödinger about Dev, because he sort of...
Do explain.
Yeah, well, Ireland were simultaneously sort of subject to the British throne and also an independent state, because Dev kept it in that sort of state of unknowingness. And also, if you think about it, you know, Ireland's neutrality had that sort of same, we were neutral, but we were kind of helping out the Allies, but we weren't really annoying the Germans. And neither, yeah, and you had all these exasperated leaders not knowing where he stood on anything, couldn't quite pin him down. I mean, he was literally the cat in the box.
Schrödinger's president.
Thing. Schrödinger's president. There you go.
Hang on, Lise. Do, 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 do. Time for a break.
Yeah.
So Dev was elected president. It's 1959 and Ireland went through so many changes in the 14 years that he was president, didn't it? I mean, there was huge turmoil in the north during that time. Government ministers here were accused of gun running in what became known as the arms crisis. But on a happier note, Lise, the swinging 60s landed in Ireland, whether Dev liked it or not.
I think probably not.
He launched television. He launched RTE television. And at the time, there's a great quote. He warned, "I must admit that sometimes when I think of television and radio and their immense power, I feel somewhat afraid. Like atomic energy, it can be used for incalculable good, but it can also do irreparable harm. Never before was there in the hands of men an instrument so powerful to influence the thoughts and actions of the multitude." Sex had arrived in Ireland.
Oh my God. And by the sound of it, I mean, I love the fact that Dev was literally comparing television to the atomic bomb. Like, he was obviously terrified of the yoke. Yeah. The old goggle box sitting in the corner, and he thought we were all
corrupting us.
Corrupting it. But of course, this was a thing, and there was a very famous quote from a politician, Deputy Oliver Flanagan at the time, and was like, there was no sex in Ireland before television arrived. And to a certain
extent. Late, especially.
Yeah, the late. Oh, sure, listen, den of iniquity that was. I mean, in 1963, the Beatles arrived to play their only gig in Ireland. There was murder on the streets, fights, screams, roars and shouts, dust-ups, everything. Cops had to be called. And again, that sort of lovely official Ireland not really getting it, just like Dev didn't get television. Mm. One of the reviews said, "At last, four hairy youngsters appeared on stage to be greeted by shrieks and whistles. Three of them walloped electric guitars, which appeared to be amplified to the decibel limit. The fourth walloped a set of drums." What else are you supposed to do with a set of drums? "They all opened their mouth and made noises to me that sounded like meow, 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 meow." I mean, hello. I mean, my God
that
almighty.
That was the Beatles.
That was the Beatles. I mean, suddenly you just had this.
But we're entering a new era. Modern Ireland is here.
Modern Ireland is here. And again, like you rightly said, whether Dev liked it or not. And you just then, when you looked at Dev, as the 60s went on, he just looked older and older and more out of touch and greyer and not really in step with what I...
Speaking of being out of touch, you know, there was that famous Muhammad Ali visit in the early 70s.
That's right. He came and he did an exhibition boxing match in Croke Park. Yes,
he did. And actually, he lived in Ireland for about a month. He was training. He travelled to Limerick and to various parts of the country, including Kerry. He had his lunch in the Dáil. He had a meeting with Jack Lynch, who was Taoiseach, two steaks and a bottle of Coke. Ali, that is, not Jack Lynch. And but he requested to visit De Valera, the president, in Oras an Uachtaráin, and it was turned down. Found a letter in the National Archives in Irish, written by Dev's secretary, who described...
That was the reason.
They refused him because they described him as that bombastic man.
Well, I suppose they were right on one level. I mean, because, you know, this was the man that had the most famous mouth. But my God, you'd think that they would have been stampeding to get a photograph with, you know, one of the most storied people at the time. It's another example of just, you know, there was that slight out of touch thing going on.
Exactly. You know, there was even a story that was all over the papers at the time. This was 1937, Dev's government. A woman from Glasgow visiting Ireland kissed her boyfriend on the grounds of a church and was sentenced to a month in prison.
But hang on, why wasn't he sentenced as well? I mean,
she kissed him. I don't. Can you imagine the case, Lise? This was under the Vice Act.
The Vice Act. Well, I mean, I'll tell you, the church certainly had us in a vice. That's for sure.
Given vice grips.
Anyway, so 1959, and De Valera finally makes it into the park, and it's been a rough enough time for him. I mean, there was revolutions and there was all kinds of carry on and trying to get the state up and running and then dealing with the war, all kinds of shenanigans. But when he gets into Oras an Uachtaráin, he was able just to knock a bit of fun out of it, because during the 60s, he literally was able to roll out the red carpet for two of the most glamorous people that ever set foot in Ireland, let alone in Phoenix Park. And the first of those was in 1961, when our very own Princess Grace and some husband of hers, what was he called again? Prince Rainier, landed in Ireland.
Oh, they did. It was a most spectacular event. And this was Hollywood glamour. I mean, she was Hollywood royalty and now actual royalty, married to the prince in Monaco, 1961. And it was the first ever state visit by any head of state to Ireland as well. So they arrived in Dublin Airport. They made their way towards Nuachtarán. The crowds lined the route along the way, and there was the cheers and shouts. And the Grimaldi family, as they were, Grace and Rainier, and they were joined by two of their three children later, Princess Caroline and Prince Albert. And they really hit it off with the De Valera family.
Which is quite, you know, I'm surprised at that because they were a bit of a homely couple at that stage. Yeah. You know, it was Eamon and you know, and the band Kayla, and they're living in this big house and probably
age 73.
Yeah. And they were such, I mean, these were glamorous and they were royal and they were sophisticated. But they did, as you say,
really
they got on great.
And there were lovely photographs of their lunches together in Oras Nuachtarán. And in fact, there's a great little movie of 73-year-old Dev being marched around the gardens at Oras Nuachtarán by Caroline, age 4. Lovely. So she had plaits and he was following her around the gardens and having
sweet.
A bit of fun. Yeah. So when they returned to Monaco after that visit, Dev sent a gift of a pony, Babbling Brook, a 6-year-old little pony from the National Stud in Kildare. And he sent that. There's a lovely description in the papers of the pony being taken by land and sea on a train down to Monaco, accompanied by a groomsman, James Marr, from the National Stud. And so it was he who took the horse to France. But the letters, Lisa, are lovely as well.
Oh,
so
fabulous.
Caroline, of course, Princess Grace wrote a beautiful thank you letter saying how the children are delighted with their Irish pony. And then Caroline wrote this hilarious, lovely little card, all of 6 words. She says, "Dear sir, thank you, love, Caroline."
Oh, so sweet.
I have to say I got a fit of laughing in the library when I found that one, because I got an image of her mother, the Princess Grace, in the palace in Monte Carlo in Monaco, saying, "You'll sit down there now, yeah, like any Irish mammy, and you'll write a nice thank you letter to that nice man, Dev."
It's so true. I can just picture it. But I think what's most extraordinary is the letter that Dev wrote back to her. And, you know, we do see him as this big stern guy and, you know, severe. But this letter, I mean, he really is Grandad Dev in it. And I'll just read it out. It's very short. It says, "My dear Princess, your very nice letter has come to me. I am delighted that you like Babbling Brook. As you are fond of her, she will grow very fond of you. When you get more used to her and have more practice, you can ride her over jumps. That will be great fun for you. But it can't be just yet, I think. Your mammy and daddy..." Mammy and daddy will tell you.
Princess Grace and Rainier, yeah.
I know. "Your mammy and daddy will tell you. Sometimes, when you are grown up, you may ride across our country here and jump our great big fences. Slán leat, and this is the Irish for goodbye. Le Cian, with love, Eamon De Valera."
That is not the Dev we learnt about in school.
It so isn't. And I think that letter gives you more of an insight to Dev's hidden side than thousands of words.
Yes.
Spoken and written about him. I think it's just beautiful.
So he sent other animals to other children, another little Caroline on the other side of the world.
That's right. And now we're into the very famous visit. And there is not a soul in Ireland that doesn't know about John F. Kennedy.
2 years later.
2 years later, June 1963. And it's quite extraordinary when you look at the footage of this visit and when you look at all the images, because you had this golden god, this gleaming man with brilliant hair and white teeth and a wide smile, and one of our own again. Just like Princess Grace, whose family hailed from Newport in Mayo, his roots were absolutely down deep, deep, deep in Irish soil, mostly down in Wexford. But
and
he was
in West Cork.
And, oh, sorry, God forbid I should forget to mention Cork. So he arrives for this. And of course, we've all know the stories about him being welcomed and all the things he did while he was here. But there's a lovely photograph that and images of him. And he's going up to Oras Nuachtarán and it's raining. And The streets are completely thronged with people. Doesn't matter, they're out to see one of their own coming home. The pride the Irish people had in John F. Kennedy was extraordinary. And the car, open top car, sweeps through. And there's Dev, an old, again, old man sitting there grinning, happy, and this shining creature beside him and waving and taking off his hat as they sweep up to the arras. I mean, it's extraordinary. And the funny thing was, though, isn't I'm not wrong here, Floor, that again,
you're never
just
wrong,
like with
Lise.
The Grimaldis, occasionally, but that often. What's rare is wonderful. But they got on really well. Again,
yes.
You had this glamorous couple and they really hit it off with the De Valeras.
They did. And then, of course, comes the incredible communications between them as well. And, oh my God, when he was leaving a few days later, so Jackie Kennedy didn't come with him, nor the children, because she was expecting another child who was born, Patrick, but didn't survive. She stayed in the States. But Dev sent a telegram to JFK on Air Force One, awaiting takeoff on the tarmac in Shannon Airport, and it is spine-chilling.
It is. It actually is. It's chilling. It's timed 12:05 p.m., 29th of the 6th, 1963. And it's very short and sweet, literally. It says, "Mr. President, your visit has been a source of joy and pride to all the people of Ireland and to all their kin throughout the world. We wish you long life, health and happiness, and pray God's blessing upon you and upon the people of the United States, Bannock Talat, Eamon de Valera, President of Ireland." And as we know, a few short months later, John F. Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas.
And wishing you long life, health and happiness.
Yeah, it's
incredible,
just
isn't it?
So sad.
There's an amazing letter that we found also in the archives in UCD, and it is a wonderful four-page handwritten letter from Jackie Kennedy thanking Eamon de Valera, the president, for attending JFK's funeral in Arlington that November. And just to read you the opening line of that, she says, "Dear Mr. President," which of course is an American. We didn't address our presidents as Mr. President until JFK came. "Dear Mr. President, I do wish to thank you with all my heart for coming to my husband's funeral and for bringing with you the Irish cadets who had moved him so a few months before in Ireland and who moved the world at his grave." So that was 26 young Irish Army cadets who travelled to the US with De Valera and did a drill in Arlington Cemetery. And would you believe they returned as old men 50 years later in 2013 on the 50th anniversary of JFK's assassination.
Isn't that extraordinary? Again, it just goes to show that everything that he did, you know, throughout the early parts of his life and so on, that still possibly those two gorgeous, incredible, glowing visits in while he was in the park are probably the things that people remember about him the clearest. And, you know, it brought a spark of joy and a sprinkle of stardust into a time when Ireland really was still emerging from a bad time.
There are fantastic YouTube videos of some of those visits. And so you see the entourage's arrival, you see Grace Kelly and Rainier actually being mobbed outside the Gresham Hotel when they attended a Dublin Arts Ball. She was wearing pink Balenciaga silk that evening and
that's
sipping
right.
A glass of champagne.
And you've just reminded me, when John F. Kennedy was in the Arras, they had a soiree for him where a load of guests were invited.
It was lashing rain, was it?
Yeah, and it ended up an absolute, oh, I mean, listen, scarlet for us all, because the Irish people lost the run.
There was
jostling and stampeding and things getting knocked over.
High heels sinking.
Heels, tears, everybody trying to push to go and, you know, get the handshook and all that. And it was, they were killed in the papers next day. It was like, this is why we can't have nice things. We cannot be sent out.
Actually, they tried to bring him in a side door to get away from the crowds, but it was locked.
It was locked. Oh, I mean, it was a bit of the old sort of, you know, the classic comedy chase about it. But again, so it goes to show, while protocol was strictly observed by various presidents and so on, the plain people of Ireland didn't get the memo. So, I mean, in July 1969, everybody in Ireland who had a telly was glued to it, because we were all waiting for the first moonwalk, the first man to walk on the moon. It was obviously just the whole world was glued, but I guarantee you nobody was probably paying more attention to the television than Space Dev.
he really was a space nerd.
He was an absolute space nerd. He loved astronauts. He loved everything. And he did actually get a chance to shine in this particular area.
Well, he did. I mean, this is a very little known, wonderful nugget. But when you look at the moon, I can't look at the moon without thinking of Dev.
Okay, that's massively sad. But anyway, we'll pass on.
There is a message. He's literally the man on the moon. There is a message from Eamon de Valera on the surface of the moon. It was carried up there in the shoulder pocket of Buzz Aldrin's spacesuit during Apollo 11. So, yeah, NASA had the bright idea of getting a message from lots of world leaders, I think 73 of them, engraved on a tiny disc. It was put in a little folder, slipped into the pocket of Buzz Aldrin in his spacesuit, and blasted off to the moon. So it's left on the surface of the moon so that any aliens who wanted to figure out what Dev was saying could, you know, come across it and tune in.
My God almighty. And like, do we know what it said?
Yes, we do. It's in Irish. I don't know how many Martians speak, you know, Gaelga. But
oh, God, you'd have to hope to have the cuppel fuckle. My God.
Well, they are green, allegedly.
Well, they might say, you know, we don't come in peace and then we're all in deep, deep trouble, you know.
So the English translation, I think it's very Dev. May God grant that the skill and courage which have enabled man to alight upon the moon will enable him also to secure peace and happiness upon the earth and avoid the danger of self-destruction.
God, you really had a bit of an apocalyptic thing going on, didn't he, between atomic bombs and all that.
But, you know, the space race throughout the 1960s, Ireland was kept very informed about the space race and Dev was very interested in it. Successive US presidents, Kennedy, Johnson and Nixon, all wrote to Dev and sent him gifts, pieces of moon rock, lunar photos and an Irish flag, which had been carried to the moon and back by astronauts as well. And in a wonderful bit of Cold War diplomacy, Dev was also in touch with the USSR about its space program. In fact, on one occasion, June 1966, letters about the lunar mission were sent between Ars Nuchthron and both superpowers on the same day.
Well, there's another example of Dev, you know, keeping all the balls in the air. I mean, that's quite extraordinary. And I must say, I did like the story about one piece of moon rock that was gifted.
Oh, it went missing.
Went missing, yeah, went missing. But luckily, President Childers was presented with one a bit later on. And so we do still have a little bit of moon rock knocking around. That would have been very embarrassing for us all.
Well, there's a great story of Dev calling up to the Oris. Dev was almost blind, you know, in later life. So he was visiting Shaunty O'Kelly, who was wearing a hearing aid. And Frank Gallagher, Dev's private secretary, was carrying a stick because he had lumbago. O'Kelly surveyed his companions and said, "Between the three of us, we make one perfect man."
So Eamon de Valera was 90 when he retired from office, which was an extraordinary achievement to actually stay in the public eye for so long. And when he left the Aris, he travelled in cavalcade down past Boland's Mill, where he had overseen his role in the Rising in 1916.
From the bakery next door. Yeah.
From the bakery next door. Exactly.
And he went straight from the Oris to a nursing home where he lived out his last few years. An incredible life, a quiet end, wasn't it, to an amazing life that had spanned almost a century of Irish history.
Next time, Erskine Childers.
His dying wish was teenage son.
Yeah.
So I want you to find and shake the hand of those who signed my death warrant.
Yeah.
And the other promise, I think, wasn't it that he told his son never to speak about the Civil War, and subsequently he never did.
You've been listening to Think You Know, The Presidents, a Today FM production presented by The Last Word.
Presented by Lee Sand and Flora McCarthy, researched by Lee Sand, Flora McCarthy and Siobhan Maguire. Recorded by Thomas Balp and Stephen McClune. Sound designed by Neil Kavanagh and produced by Siobhan Maguire.
Archive clips from British Pathé and President.ie. A huge thanks to The Last Word and wider Today FM team. You can follow us on Go Loud, Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this, please give us a like and a review.